Are you looking it up? Okay. I hope I called it the right title.
It's echoing in my ears. It's like slightly.
Oh, yeah. You need to be on mute. You need to be on
mute. I need to be on mute. Mute. I am on mute.
You are mute. How echoey in your ears is it?
It's like half a second. Everything everybody says is half a second. I hate it.
Yeah, just take half an earphone.
That does not help.
So I should get rid of it. Yeah, I should back out of this. Yeah. Okay.
Can you hear now?
Oh, that's so much better.
Okay. We're going to turn our volume up so we can hear. Help me if your ears are too sensitive. You can turn that.
I doubt it.
Hello, hello, hello.
Say something to us.
Okay. Can you guys talk some, please?
Welcome to wow. Radio KMET, the K-Meet. Really, all right.
Put some stuff in here. We're going to stop.
We're here to play some of the oldies and goldies from the days of yore. Klaus
David
Cooper
was prepared. David, shut up. Bailey.
Hello, I'm here to talk about
okay, thank you. Klaus right, Kleber. The people who actually need to test their microphone is us. So, okay, I'm going to stop. Hold on. Hello and welcome to Table Talk. It's Taylor
and Alice
and
Bailey
and David
and Victoria.
So excited to have the whole team on this podcast.
We
today.
Are all here. That only took five runs. Alice predicted seven.
I did.
She blamed me for the volume of that as if I'm a troublemaker.
I'm the one who edits the podcast, so yes.
Well, hello, friends. It's been a hot minute.
It has.
We skipped April. We did start thinking about this podcast at the beginning of April, but now it's the end of April. Here we are.
We don't have to be self-deprecating, though, about it. We've been taking our time to grieve.
Friends, in case you have not heard the sad, sad news, our dearest, beloved designer, Klaus Teuber, has died. Klaus died on the 1st following a brief illness. A sad day for us in the tabletop world because he designed Catan, you know?
Yeah.
The one that gets everyone in. It's the starting drug. What is that? What do they call it? Marijuana?
Gateway.
The gateway drug. Yeah. It is the gateway drug.
We're going to spend some time today talking about, I was going to say our memories of Klaus. I don't think any of us have met him.
We've not met him, though we do have his photo posted in this house.
That was going to be, that was my first memory of Klaus, was his little picture in the shrine. Why is this man here with a candle? Because he's very important.
Before we get to our memories of Klaus, we want to talk about what we've been playing, right?
Oh, yeah.
What have you been playing, Taylor?
Well, this morning I played about 7,000. Thousand rounds of Ticket to Ride because Board Game Arena has switched the tournament from a four-player game to a two-player game, which was the right move. But that means I can get through 15-minute games pretty quickly. And of course, I got to that gold status and I needed platinum. But y'all, these jokers on Board Game Arena do not play what I find to be the gentleman's way of playing Ticket to Ride. They are blockers. I think it is so rude to just throw a train on because you know someone's going there. First of all, you're wasting your trains. You only have 45 trains. You could get so much done with those two trains if you would just draw some more tickets. But it also means that I have to, like, as soon as that happens and I lose because of it, I have to hop back on and play another game. So I am platinum. Happy to report.
Good work.
Platinum level.
Good job. Bailey, what have you been playing?
Well, I have been diving into Hoplomachus Victorum, the giant solo-only Hoplomachus spinoff from Chip Theory Games, the company that makes the bathtub games made of neoprene and poker chips. It is a arena fighter, to boil it down to its most basic, and it is played in sort of condensed campaigns of roughly 40 to 50 encounters, which sounds like a lot, but also they take 10 to 15 minutes a piece. So it makes it really easy to just jump in and play a couple and track my progress and move on.
How long does it take to set up?
Well, with the provided chip organizer and the way that the mats are laid out, it takes 2 to 3 minutes to set up. It really is bad.
Wow, that's some value for your
money. Yeah, for sure. Right. And the initial setup for the campaign takes a while, but again, you do that once every, 40 to 50 encounters. So that's really not that big of a deal. I have a full article that I'm working on for it for the website that is taking me forever to write because I find it really daunting to write about something I very, very much like. So it's a lot easier to say, well, this is bad because of X, instead of being like, this game is good because everything is great. And I'm just so excited. Please play this game. It's so good. So expect more about that on the site.
Victoria, what have you been playing these days?
I have also been playing a lot of Ticket to Ride on Board Game Arena. Woo-hoo! My experience is very similar to Taylor's with that. But I also got the recent opportunity to teach some of my friends how to play Dixit, which is I would say it's probably my favorite party game of those where everyone like chooses a card and there's a judge. Except this one is, it's pictures. So to me, it's very replayable because picture's worth 1,000 words. And it's also very fun with what people come up with as the prompts. And the art is pretty, and it's just overall fun. It's got little bunnies that are the people trackers for points. So that's been...
That's the one where the box is the board also, where it's got like three-dimensional, like...
Not the version that I was playing.
Oh.
But...
Oh.
What's great about Dixit is, in fact, it gets harder the more you play it with the same people and the same cards.
Yes.
Because you get to know the cards. And because the idea is you want to try and not fool, but you want to try and fool almost everyone, but not everyone to get you the most points. So unlike apples to apples or, you know, all the others of that ilk, it actually, you know, there are so many expansions, but actually if you stick with just one or two and stay with those, I think that's the optimal experience.
Yeah, I think you're totally right.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
I get like random niggling, like, I really want to play Dixit feelings, which is unusual for this kid. Really hates party games, but I do really like Dixit.
That's a good one.
Except for the version that we have, like the base cards are creepy.
They're kind of boring. I like the expansion set we got.
Yeah, that expansion is the gold foil one.
Are you gonna ask me what I've been playing?
Yes, Alice, what have you been playing? I asked you before and you like really shifted that off to Bailey.
Well, because I couldn't remember what I had been playing. I've been playing a lot of stuff because we have some new students who certainly have come into the hobby with Catan, but other things as well. So we've been playing various things. I was just thinking that one of my new favorite games that you and I played when we had our little game retreat weekend was Kinoko,
which is
tiny. Gosh. It's a little bitty box from Helvetic, which we love. It's a mushroom themed, though the mushroom is fairly thin on the ground in terms of a theme. If you've played Hanabi, I have not played Hanabi, but as I understand it, is very similar in the sense that you hold a hand of cards where you are not looking at the face of your own cards. Everybody, you're playing essentially everybody else's hands because
it's like heads
up,
but like with real strategy and not party game.
Yeah. So you have three little mushroom cards in your hands, and there's everybody at the table has those, and there's also two hands on the table face down. Everybody has their own sort of mushroom family, which is a particular color that you are trying to get those three cards together somewhere on the table, whether it's in somebody else's hand or yours or the ones that are flat on the table. And you roll dice to determine like switching the threes or changing hands with someone or whatever. And you're just trying to get your three together. And when it doesn't have to be in your hand, it can be anywhere. But as soon as you think you figured that out, you call stop, and then you double check, and you get points for whether you did it right or not. It's tiny, it's fast, it's mean. I am very bad at it, it turns out, because
you won so many times when we played. It was just you and me. I think I barely
You're
won
the only
once.
Person to beat. because my memory is not good. I would say Kinoko is a little bit like that game Memory that kids play where, you know, you just flip over tiles, except that it's for adults. It's more complicated and required. There's just a lot of like staring at each other and going, no idea what's in my hand. What is happening? So Run, Don't Walk. I bought it as a way to feel less sad when a friend died.
Bailey, I'm happy to report that since we last talked to you on this podcast, I have purchased Beer and Bread and played it.
And so did I. Yeah, it's very good.
I taught everybody to play incorrectly. Same. And then we played it incorrectly for a while. And then Alice was like, this is right. And figured it out.
I also taught it to Isaac only from memory, having played it with Taylor. So we had a wrong rule. And also I misremembered some stuff. So that was good.
I still think my wrong rule is actually more fun than the real rules, but... It might be. Friends, Klaus Tuber has died. So we're here to come together in memoriam and discuss our experience of him and his games, but very specifically, Catan.
Mm-hmm.
So David, why don't you go first, since you have the maybe earliest experience and also the most recorded on digital media experience with Catan, given that you have recorded a whole separate podcast of your experience. Shameless plug for Game Changers. Go listen. Tell us more about your experience with Catan, David.
I used to subscribe to a magazine called Games Magazine, which recently has gone defunct, but from 1978 through to the late 2000s, it pretty well was the go-to for me for game reviews, as well as puzzles and all kinds of other things. And when I started reading it in 1980, when I was 12, most of the games it reviewed were like, it's so interesting. Like at that point, a lot of games were like Trivial Pursuit clones or Monopoly clones or abstracts of various kinds. Pente was big at the time and other things. And then in the early 90s, it had a whole article devoted to these games from Germany. And it was actually, I'm pretty sure this is true, is the same issue that it first talked about this little game coming out of Washington called Magic the Gathering. I think those were both in the same issue in 1993. And so it was talking about these German games, what they called German games, because all these designers were German. And one of them was Adel Verflucht or something by Rainer Knizia. But the one that's been getting the most play at the Gathering of Friends, which was even then a thing, was this game called Die Siedler von Catan, which at that point was only in German, but had made its way across the pond. And it was very intriguing. And I then went to visit my friend in Cambridge, Massachusetts that summer. And there was a little game store right off Harvard Square called Games People Play. I don't know if it's still there, but I walked in and there was Catan, now in English. And so I picked it up because I'd read about it in Games Magazine. And I brought it home and I introduced it to everyone I knew. And we were all like obsessed with it for like months. And then later years, I introduced it to my nieces and nephews in Boston. They actually lived in Brookline. It's so funny to think in retrospective, people used to talk about Catan as a complex game, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like the level of complexity versus something like Trivial Pursuit versus even something like Monopoly was considered a big jump, which just shows you how the Overton window for games has shifted. So, you know, he really was the OG, one of the OGs, him and Knizia and Kramer and Kiesling and Andreas Seyfarth with Puerto Rico. That's why they were called German games before they were called Euro games, because they were all German.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. That was gorgeous.
Yeah, I think our shared experience of Catan is why I put the game in such high regard, is because when I think about Catan, sure, you know, there's inside jokes about like, I don't want your stinking sheep and, you know, just different things like that add a lot to the game and to my memories of the game. But it's more about the fact that it feels like such a social experience. You know, so many games like Codenames or Dixit to some extent talk about being these social experiences or a party game or whatever the case may be. But I always felt that Catan was really good for that, because not to like sound like I'm being mean to the game, but you don't think a lot. You know, you have a very small menu of options. You roll some dice, you do what they say. Do you have a house? You get the sheep. Yay, isn't that great? And so that leaves a lot of room to have conversation or to exist in a space with people, which when I was playing Catan the most, I was the most stressed. I was scared about my future. I was in college. I didn't know what was going on. And so it was nice to just have a place to sit and hang out and be quiet or do whatever. And so it's hard for me to think about towns or Longest Road when I think about all those memories of Catan more so than the game itself.
I'd just like to take this moment to give a shout out to Liz's Sheep Shack. Making sheep and selling sheep since 2012.
Still in business. Yeah.
Very much.
Still in business.
I'm going to put my stuff in here because yes, that is my experience of Catan as well, as just like as a formative friendship experience in college. Liz is my best friend and she is definitely the person that was sitting across the table from me most of the time when I was playing Catan hardcore. And like when I say we were playing hours on end back to back, friends, think whole days, whole weekends, where we would just keep going over and over and over again, because it was that like thing that was keeping us together, the thing to do, but like to be together and in community with one another. It was awesome. But the memory of Catan that I want to share is actually many years post that, when Liz, who has since moved across the country from me and gotten married, and I were visiting. I was at Liz's house and her now husband was like, let's play Catan. And Liz and I were like, great, let's do it. And so we set up Catan and Andrew was there and like was ready to play. We started to play and she and I played the whole game silently in about 20 minutes and whooped him. It was awesome. Just our like shared understanding of each other and how we play. And we got done and he looked at us and he said, you two never talked. You know, you have the same language with each other and with your game group that I think I was thinking about when David was saying like, oh, like Dixit gets harder as you have this like communal like culture and language built between you because you just know how to predict what people are doing. Mm-hmm. For Catan, it's the opposite. It gets easier because you can just like, yup. I know what you're going to do. You know what I'm going to do and we're just going to do it. And now we play this game. Hooray. It's the true version of your friendship is around the Catan table.
The class of games that falls into, like Euchre or Risk or Diplomacy. Now, some people might know the name of the guy who designed Diplomacy, for example. No one, I don't think, knows who originally designed Risk. I don't know. Certainly no one knows who invented Euchre and those kind of games. That made me just realize that with Catan, and with Euro games, all of a sudden, designers became personalities in their own right.
Yeah.
And so Klaus Teuber became a marketing tool, you know, just like, you know, from the director of, this became like from the designer of Catan, now here's his other game. But that was just one part of the evolution of the hobby that people wanted to know more about who were the people behind the game. And that just made me think of that in terms of those shared experiences, those, you know, playing bridge for hours and things. But this was something new.
Yeah, to sort of jump on that, David, I don't know that this is my earliest memory of Catan so much. Honestly, my earliest memory of Catan was my friend Bonnie saying, hey, let's play this cool game. And I'm going, eh, I don't want to. And then I didn't for years. So that's a thing, to my everlasting shame, I guess. Early on here at the Edge House, we played a lot. I mean, as Taylor and Bailey were both saying, like we played a lot of Catan here 14 years ago and up until now. We have even created a giant size set of Catan game that we take onto campus periodically where the hexagons are 31 inches across.
Giant meaning you stand on the
Catan You stand board. On it, yeah.
With a person shoes. Is a robber who yeah, wears the
robber's
a mask.
The robber's a person and we have three-dimensional resources. It's a whole thing. We could maybe talk about that on a future podcast. But the point is we were obsessed with it and we still play it a lot. And one of my earliest memories here of playing that is, as you say, David, that Klaus himself sort of becomes part of that experience. Not just that we have his photo up in the house, but we have this phrase that we will often say when somebody says, oh, can I do this? And we say, Klaus says nine.
Klaus Cooper says nine.
It typically came up for some reason. People always thought it was funny to say like, oh, I'll trade a wood for a wood. And like literally the rules say you can't do that. Klaus says nine. And so we say that a lot, certainly about Catan, but sometimes about other things. And the new people don't know what I'm talking about, which is fine. Victoria, what about you? What's a memory you have of this game?
I think I'm in the generation, like just barely overlapped with Taylor and Bailey and Liz and all of them. I remember them being much older. But my first memories of Catan are at the house. You know, that's the one that it's funny that you all say, oh, it's not that complicated. Well, from coming from a beginner standpoint, who's only ever played like Sorry, it was complicated, but that's what I really liked about it is I think gateway game is a very good phrase for it because it is what gets you into of like, oh, this is what a board game can be. It doesn't have to be just roll the dice. It doesn't have to be just chance. It can be strategy. It can be, it can change, the experience can change based on who you're playing it with. So that for me was the real jumping off point. And it is very effective at that in terms of, I'm sure you'll have the same experience of when you're trying to pull someone into the world of board games. Catan is often the one that you introduce them to. Not only is it pretty well known at this point, but it is kind of a great bridge between the more traditional Milton Bradley games and the wide, wide world of board games.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that made me think of when you talked about Taylor, that it's like the gateway game, is that really still true? Because there was definitely a period that Catan was referred to. Like, first of all, when I used to tell people I played board games, they would say stuff like, oh, you mean like Monopoly and Risk? Then there was the period where they would say, oh yeah, I've heard of Settlers of Catan. But then that stopped. And actually what people started to bring up more were either games like Cards Against Humanity has been a big one, or Secret Hitler is another one that, sure, that people code think names. Social. Yeah, Codenames sort of, but I would say Cards Against Humanity or Munchkin. So there could be regional differences as well. So I'm curious what people think, whether the Catan, is it still really the gateway that it used to be?
I actually am interested in that because, Victoria, I think you're the one who said that. Do you, when you teach people new games, like when you're trying to get them into either sort of generally the hobby or more specifically strategy games, is Catan your go-to still?
So that's the thing. I think we're at a point where most people have played Catan. Whether they continue in the hobby or not, everyone, it's become so ubiquitous if everyone has played Catan. So you're right. I think I am finding more of like, I need, what is the next step after Catan? What is that game? And for me recently, that has been Azul, because it's really pretty. It's really fun to play with. Or Carcassonne, because that is very easy to teach and also unique components, but also similar in terms of like you play on a flat surface and you've got tiles and you've got meeples. So it's a great transition with a slightly different gameplay.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just fascinated, David, that you would say Cards Against Humanity is a gateway game to the hobby. I guess it is in the sense that lots of people play it.
I think people find that one on their own. Right, but like if you're getting introduced to the hobby by a gamer, that is not the first one that gamer is pulling off the shelf.
Absolutely true. I absolutely agree. Arguments about what constitutes a gateway game is a whole podcast in and of itself. I do find though that people, when I now say to people, "Oh, I play board games," they're like, "Oh, I love Cards Against Humanity. I play that all the time." So in terms of people's word association with board games. But I agree with you, Taylor, 100%, that in terms of a gamer trying to get people into playing board games, they don't choose Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, yeah. And people, when people tell me, they're like, I play games, I play Exploding Kittens or whatever, I'm like, okay, let me just fix you right now. And sometimes I do go for Catan if they haven't played. It's usually an ask of like, have you played? A lot of people, honestly, at this point, tell me that Catan has ruined their lives or their friendships because they don't have like those gentleman's rules. Like Catan has become more of a social game in a lot of people's heads because it can really ruin friendships. Like the trading aspect, people being complete, just like not playing nicely. There's a lot of like room in that, like in the game for that because of the social like trading aspect of it, where people stop thinking strategically and start thinking just like up yours kind of, which is not nice. Like we don't do that.
It's the difference between being rude and being competitive.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast too, but that's how friendships get ruined.
Yeah. Just to bring it back to the, like gateway conversation, like David said, it's a whole thing to unpack what is a gateway. But I think if you break it down into two different groups, you have the interested in the hobby completely outside of it, meaning they have no one that is inside of the hobby. And then there's those that have a Victoria that are like, hey, come on in. We're going to play some cool stuff. And I think the answer to some extent to both of those, and I've talked about this before, is the influence of widespread games at stores like Target or even Walmart. You can buy, here in the States, you can buy Pandemic at Walmart and Target. You can buy Catan at Walmart and Target. To those that are newer to the hobby that don't know a lot of the history of it or don't really have a lot of context for things, I can see how some people could take a game like Catan and say, this is the Milton Bradley now. So what's the new hobby gateway? And so then that's when you start having conversations about like, well, Wingspan or Meadow or games like that.
Yeah, I think this is a great place to transition into like Catan is the new Monopoly, but also Catan as the first game of my experience of having expansions and offshoots. Because I'm sitting here looking at the stat going, man, we played regular Catan for a really long time. And then we got the 4-6 player expansion. And then
extension.
And then we got Seafarers and Cities and Knights, I think around the same time. And now we also have Traders and Barbarians. And then there's a couple more beyond that. So I want to start the discussion about like, was Catan sort of the first game to really start iterating on itself in a big way? Or like, was that your experience of that? Because it definitely for me is the first, like the when I think a game with expansions or good expansions, I think about Cities and Knights.
Catan definitely was. I mean, Toiber has done other games. He did try. He did Alassan, the first City of Catan. I'm actually hard pressed to name anything non-Catan from his opus. Look, the fact is he was a dental technician who was, like many Germans, a played board games with his family and, you know, had this vision for a game about the Vikings, which then turned into Catan, and it became huge. And he found a good thing, and he realized that people wanted more of that thing. So he kept iterating on that. He tried a couple of other things, like Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell tried to do serious roles. He did that one, was it Adaptation?
Yes, very good.
But people don't want to see Will Ferrell do drama. They want to see him get kicked in the nuts. As an actor, you may find that really hard to deal with. And I think as a game designer, he may have found that hard to deal with.
So let me ask you this, David. How much of like the iteration on Catan was driven by Klaus? And how much of it was driven by Mayfair?
I can't answer that. I don't know enough about it. Like many designers, he kept tinkering with things even after he finished the game. So
Reiner does that quite a bit. Like the Doctor does that. But like I'm thinking about other games that have expansions, right? Which honestly can't even think about it. Like Carcassonne.
Right.
Is that the designer or is that the publisher that's saying like, we need another one?
Look, Dominion is one game where the expansions were baked in from the beginning. Like Vaccarino had 7 expansions lined up after, you know, when he had that initial thing. I know that wasn't true for Catan. The expansions came because Catan was such a success. He was still working as a dental technician. He couldn't afford to retire yet. So he kept making stuff. The same goes for Alan Moon. Alan Moon has done lots of other games besides Ticket to Ride, but I can't think of one that has succeeded at all. Whereas expansions for Ticket to Ride still keep rolling out. I think that Klaus wanted to provide for his family, you know, and, you know, he had children at that time, pretty small children, who then became part of the company. So late now, I think it's his children who drive a lot of the digital media stuff and all that other thing. I guess the answer is, I don't think Mayfair drove it at all. I think Mayfair was very happy to ride the crest of the wave, and Klaus was all the more willing to provide the content.
Just because there's a lot of content around Catan, like I'm literally scrolling through BGG right now. He has 222 titles listed. Now, of course, we all know that's expansions. That's tiny, like
it can be one card.
It could be a single card. Yeah. It could be anything. Like that's not necessarily as prolific as it sounds. But like, just because there's a lot doesn't mean that the designer was irritated by having to do it. I get the sense that he just liked Catan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To talk a little bit about that relationship between the designer and the publisher and all of that, I think it's important to remember that Toiber involved his family with a lot of these designs and playtesting and all of that. to the point where the company that is just Catan, like there's like they're their own entity now of just they make the Catan products. Hoiber's position has been filled by his son. And so if we take that back 30 years, there's a very good chance that it was just, you know, Klaus leading his family just to be like, do we got more ideas? This is fun. Let's keep doing it. Combined with the very obvious fact that, hey, this is successful. What if we came up with more ideas? That'd be cool, huh? So I don't think that was necessarily one or the other. I think whomever the original German publishers were would be like, yes, please, whatever you say. I think there was a good relationship there. Mm. But if we look at Catan, because there was that big rebranding, right? Mm-hmm. When it first mm-hmm. came out, it was the Settlers of Catan, and the expansion was the Seafarers of Catan. When they spun off into their own thing, it became Catan, colon, whatever is going on. Mm-hmm. And some of that is probably to help organize the, what did you say, 222 Catan yeah. products. It just becomes a lot easier to sort of do it like that. And, I mean, they have a whole team, so I would assume that it's not just him anymore.
Roundtable question, what is your favorite variety of Catan that you have ever played? Victoria, go!
This is going to be easy because I've only played the base and I've played Seafarers. So I would say Seafarers because it does expand upon the original Catan. As fond as my memories are, sometimes it's fun to get into something a little different.
What's yours, Alice?
Mine is definitely the combination of Seafarers and Studies in Knights. Just because I had played so much of the base game that I got kind of bored of it. And so then I very briefly switched to Seafarers and then added Studies in Knights. And then because I was playing it on my phone, I got even into the goofball version where it was Seafarers, Studies in Knights, plus dragons, plus gold. That was ridiculous.
Go, David, go.
I actually like the ones that are the historical ones because I mean, the original Settlers of the Stone Age, which is now coming out again, they've done a rebranding of it. I have Settlers of the Stone Age and recently played it. I took it to as part of that tribute to Teuber thing, we played it. And it still holds up really well. It was really interesting to play Catan on a Catan Earth. Like you're playing on an Earth that's been Catanified. And then there are tech trees and there are it's been interesting to see. I think there are more interesting design tweaks in the historical one. But I think my favorite is the Roman one. You start at the edge of the Roman Empire as barbarians, and then you plunder and plunder and plunder. And then once you plunder a certain amount on this Catanified map of Europe, you then settle into actual settlements, and then the end game is a more traditional Catan thing. I like how he's tried to do things with the thing that aren't just like, oh, here's another map, because there are literally dozens of Catan things which are just maps of different German provinces and or American states.
Settlers of America is one of the histories. Is there a different one that's like that is?
There are literally Catan maps for individual states. I'm not sure there's one for Ohio, but there is one for New York State. I don't know which others. So you'd have to look them up. And they each have little special rules, but I don't know. And the maps are gorgeous because they also have they're the old National Geographic maps that have little call-outs to like historical things on them.
Mm-hmm. I also, my favorite Catan is Settlers of America. I think I clearly need to go back and play some more histories, but if they're in German, that might be a struggle. Settlers of America is amazing. Like it's such a, like the level of complexity and like strategy of that game is just very elevated relative to Catan, but it's still got that same feel. Plus there's good cows. So like, you know, I'm here for the cows.
After all that excitement about histories and Rome and America, I like the base game at 4. Base game 4 players is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How come?
It's not inherently a bad thing. I still really enjoy Cities and Knights. I really enjoy Seafarers, but it's just kind of that trade-off. I mean, we all have growing collections or far too large collections. And so it just kind of becomes that trade-off of if I'm adding in complexity and I'm taking away from the ease of the social ability of the game, which I put in very high regard, then I want to switch to something else. Mm. If this were to be classified as anything, I would think base game Catan is near beer and pretzels in my head. And so if we're moving up past that and adding things to it, I just think there's other games that I would rather be playing.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's like a comfort food level of just base game Catan.
Yeah. If Taylor and Liz or some other friends of mine, like all that play board games, all got together, it's like, yeah, we're going to play something new. We're going to play something crazy. But also we need time to catch up. So we'll just play two or three games of base Catan real quick, you know, mm-hmm. just to keep us engaged. But also gives us time to talk because we're not thinking like crazy.
I do get that feeling of like, I just want to sit down and play Catan.
Yeah.
Right? It holds up. It's really good.
How much does it hold up from a game design point of view, as it were? Like, if Catan came out today, what would the reviews be like?
I actually think it would still hold up. Like, it's still got, like, it's got that even balance of social and strategy and ease of access. I think that the rule book would have to be rewritten. The rule book is long and dense for no reason.
Oh my gosh. It's the era of the super beige rulebook. Yes.
The beige rulebook.
The only game that came with its own almanac. You know, you had to read the rules on the almanac.
And it really, relative to other games that have almanacs, it does not need it, even remotely. I think that like just game rulebook design has gotten so much better. But yeah. I think it would still hold up.
In an era of people being so cool on randomness and so cool on player interaction, and also people being generally afraid to be mean, I feel like it could be pigeonholed into a, it could have this air about it that it's much meaner than it actually is. I could, like, if this came out today, I could see some people being like, it's like Tammany Hall or Chinatown. It's this brutal thing of trading. And it's like, that's not what the vibe is. But there is such a fear of meanness that I think this game could be pigeonholed and kind of people shy away from it because of that.
I think it would have to have some sort of shtick for it to be successful. You know, it would have to lean really, really hard into the Viking theme, or it would have to be like, it's like Game of Thrones, but a board game, for it to be successful. Like, it, because there are so many iterations and because it spawned this whole generation of games, for it to be successful today, I think it would have to have its own thing. It can't just be like, oh, it's a social game, oh, it's a trading game, oh, it's, you know, more complicated than Monopoly. It would have to have some other thing to pull people in to want to play it.
No, I think you're totally right. And actually, as you said that, Victoria, I was remembering, I think there is a Game of Thrones Catan. Because of course there is.
Yeah, I don't think that the theming would really, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. The theming is really not in the second.
It's right almost now. Too abstract. Like, it's not an abstract game, but like, you're farming and that's it. Like,
and like historical games in general have really taken a lot of flack. At least this one like avoids weird appropriative culture stuff.
Well, it does.
Does it?
It does, I mean, by not having any humans in it.
But here's the thing, is that is part of why they rebranded it as Catan, because settlers has connotations that Teuber didn't think about, not in a hegemonic way. He just saw it as a Viking game. There were no indigenous people to worry about, and whatever. He wasn't thinking on that level. And in fact, so I feel like they rebranded it without, just as Catan, so as not to, it wasn't about those kind of sensibilities. Mm-hmm. I think the two strikes against it from contemporary design standards are the randomness of the resource generation, because we've all had that experience where we build a settlement on a 5, 8, 10, and oh my God, I'm going to get so many resources, and then we never get any resources. Yep. Now, some people make a deck of 36 cards that are like reproduce the probabilities of two dice, and then you literally turn them over instead of rolling the dice, so you are guaranteed to have the same empirical probabilities. That was a house rule that was suggested back in the 90s. Anyway, that's the first strike against Catan. The other one is the trading aspect, because it's not gamified. It's totally reliant on personal persuasion and or intimidation, and that is something that has disappeared. Like the new Dune Imperium, for example, there is negotiation in the game, but it's not the negotiation of the original Dune game. It's totally been gamified. Games today don't want to have to rely on the persuasion, at least non-party games. Euros do not want to have to depend on the personal persuasive abilities or possible meta power imbalances between players. So those two things alone, let alone the possible thematic issues, would I think Catan would be hammered for those today.
Yeah, I think it's such a bummer that people aren't into to randomness and meanness. Like, I'm not saying that every game should have both of those elements or that that should be the primary aspect of them, but I like a mean game.
Yeah, I think that the people, I think that the industry itself, as David said, has really done a good job of separating out those people into niche markets and then marketing to them in their own spaces rather than having games that bring both together. Because we are probably pretty rare as gamers where we're kind of open to that, especially because we do dabble into the heavier stuff.
I will say that on BGG, there are, seems like frequently forum posts or articles where people have said, like, I went to this board game meetup and everyone was so mean. And like, there was this one particular person who was like, his entire goal was to win, which, I mean, we were playing games. So we do want to win, but like, there's a way to play that is fun and kind that isn't rude. And so when I say a game is mean, I mean that it's hard. I mean that it can be punitive in a mechanical sort of way, but not in an interpersonal way. I'll say this, that one of the ways that I end up playing games here at the Edge House is somebody will say it's Catan. We'll take a spot that I wanted to build a settlement on. Or I was just playing a little Fairy Trails yesterday, another Uwe moment. And I should say Uwe Rosenberg. Sorry, this is not the Uwe Rosenberg cast. We will come to that later. It's a two-player game. You're building roads, and you're essentially trying to close off your roads so that you can place pieces on to the board. And so part of the strategy is to make the other person's roads unclosable. And that's what this person was doing with every play, and it was so irritating, but not in a I hate you, I'm gonna never forgive you for this, there's gonna be an emotional toll. It's the joking, how dare, taking it lightly while also taking it seriously, is something that I find really important to gameplay in general and has always been how I play Catan. And I've heard people say, like, this game can ruin friendships.
Well, I think there's just a certain level of, like, consent to me is kind of the feeling that comes up in my head of, like, you really do need to have a discussion of what your game experience is going to be before you get in with strangers.
That's why
BGG can become really complicated, because you just hop in and you don't know who you're across the table from. I have really felt, like, in times where I've played with strangers in the past, I felt regret over not having a consent conversation around the table before. And so sometimes even like at Gen Con, like I will, if I get into a game with strangers, I will set up a quick, like, let's just have a quick conversation about expectations so that we don't have like hurt feelings around the table. And, you know, people get really put off by that because they want to be the person that's not being nice.
Well, right. And you could say, like, I don't play nice. I play mean. Like, okay, great. That's helpful for me to know that that's the game that I'm getting into.
Yes.
I will also be mean.
I think we just need more of that. Like, that can become a really meta conversation of, like, we need more of that in culture in general of, like, please present yourself honestly and then let's have a conversation about how our relationship should go and how I want to be treated so that we can, like, follow the, you know, the platinum rule or whatever. Like, please treat me how I want to be treated. And if I've asked you to not do this so personally or to like make personal digs or to like, you know, make it about me, please stop. People in Catan, I have heard people say, no, I'm not going to trade with Taylor because it's Taylor. And I'm like, okay, when I tell you to stop doing that, you need to stop. Like, you can still do it, but stop saying it out loud. Cause it's like, there's a feelings thing going on in there.
What you are talking about is a nuanced conversation for people that have been in the hobby. And I think what people complain about on BGG are when people literally forget the thesis of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Every board game that we play presupposes that you are going for victory. And if you change that thesis to, I'm going to go ruin David's day because he took my favorite spot, then literally the game starts to fall apart and you're playing something different than everyone else at the table. And that's not cool. And that's when things start to really break down. And that's when a lot of people's feelings get hurt. If I'm pointing a road north and I'm going to a spot and Taylor already did, I'm instigating that. And now we're in a race, and that's part of it. And if I lose, that's okay, because I put my dog in that race. Whereas, like I said, if Taylor was like, well, Bailey wouldn't trade with me, so now I'm going to spend all game ruining her stuff, then that is literally against what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think it goes the other way as well, is because there will always be some people that will say, that will interpret you blocking them in any way, even if you do it nicely, as being mean. And that's why I think it's great that there are a lot of co-op games when you are all on the same team and you're all going for the same goal. You're not competing with each other. You are joining together. And I think making that distinction between, like, this is the point of this game is for one person to win. The point of this other game, if you want to do that, is for all of us to win. And introducing, I mean, I deal a lot with, like, really, really new folks who are not into the board gaming culture per se, but introducing that concept, I think, can draw more people in, because it, some people, yeah, we'll see. Anytime that you do anything that is detrimental to my victory is being mean. So also having that level of conversation is good as well.
Yeah. Well, and the question of what it means to win, like, David, I know you were talking about that at one point in terms of, like, fun. We're a little bit off topic from Catan specifically, but that's okay. I think I've said this on the pod before, is that to me, winning, there's winning the game itself, which doesn't happen that often for me. But the idea of we all win together means not that there's a co-op necessarily, but that we are winning by getting to spend this time together. And that's feelings, blah, blah, blah. I love it. Like, that's literally why I play these games. I do not mind losing regularly, because so much of it is about the people that I'm with and the experience of the game itself and getting to try a new puzzle and whatever.
I just wanted to do a good call out to Wacky Wacky West, because Taylor introduced it to me, and it is so good. It takes, like, if you look at it from a design perspective, that's the title that he designed right before Catan. That was 91. Catan was 95. Wacky Wacky West, the way it plays, and the reason that I brought it up in this context is because we were just talking about meanness within Catan. Catan is, I have no other way to describe it. Catan could be played at church. It's a nice, lovely game. Wacky Wacky West is brutal, and you will have a lot of hatred in your heart. So what you are doing is you are helping in a lot of air quotes, build a town out in the West, and you are helping to lay canals and roads and railroad tracks. However, we all have a particular goal in mind on where these things are supposed to be laid. And we get certain points if they're pointed at certain buildings. And every time anyone goes to place any one of those route types down, we all get to vote as players at the table.
Nice.
Do you want to stay out of the vote? Do you want to put a lot on the table? Do you want to say, absolutely not, this will never pass? And all of that information is mixed up, so you don't know exactly who did it, but then you can start saying, okay, well, I think Taylor likes the banks, so maybe we got to stop Taylor from getting stuff pointed there. It has some of that hidden information that can loosely exist in Catan. You know, if I see David get a sheep 17 turns ago and he's not spent it, will I remember that? Probably not. Is that crucial? Probably not. Wacky Wacky West really leans into that. And that hidden information and just trying to stop people's evil plans is so much fun, especially because this is a tile game. And so if you have a piece of railroad track that is 5 units long, that's probably the only one that you have that is 5 units long. So if you place it in the wrong spot, tough. It is so Amazing. Much fun.
Are there toilets in this game?
I don't remember any toilets.
I think there's outhouses.
Oh, outhouses, yes. I was like, toilets? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's real good. I do, the one thing that makes me sad about Wacky West is that it's best at three. Yeah, I mean, one of the benefits of Catan is it's good at two.
It is not good at six.
It's long at six. I think it's great at six. I hate it. Frankly, at six. Oh, I'm here for the 4-hour game. I did win my copy from the games library at Gen Con because they were giving away stuff that nobody wanted to play.
I remember that.
I was gonna ask, did we want to say if we still like it or think it's still a good game?
I will answer that question, Bailey. I got tired of it because I did play it so much. So I haven't played it for a while. And every now and again, there's a new person who's like, oh my gosh, Catan, we should really play that. And I'm like, I want to support you and I do not want to play it. But perhaps, as is the case when someone dies, just the sort of the moment of Klaus's death, I thought, I do like that game though, but it's a good game. I really do like it. There's a reason we made a super giant size version of it. It's a good game. And so I guess I played that once a year. I would say, yes, I do still think it's a good game. I do still love it. But it's one that stays on the back burner because there's so many new things and so many other interesting things.
Yeah. I would say I don't have any issue with it, but I don't play it. It's not on my phone anymore, and I don't play it online.
I would definitely play one of the historical ones, if given the right group. I don't think I would ever choose to just play basic Catan. I feel the state of the art of design has progressed, and it was the best of its time, and it was a huge and influential game for its time. But for what it is, there are games that do it better. Machikoro was the first one to kind of take Catan. If someone came to me and said, if I would like Catan, what would I go to next? It would be space, hands down. Or maybe one of the historical ones. But to me, Catan itself, it will always be in the pantheon. But
Victoria, do you still like Catan?
I do. Because for me, I don't think I've ever won a game of Catan.
So oh, no!
But that's what I like, right? I like playing games that I try different strategies out and see what works. So I've still not hacked how to win Catan. I've tried to, like, you know, the bricks and wood. I've tried the sheep or grain. But like you said, the dice rolling the probabilities don't ever work out. So sometimes it still doesn't have it. But I like that. I like playing games that I lose at. And so because I still have not won it, I haven't hacked it. I still like to play a good solid game, Catan.
Yeah, it's a loaded question because it's one of the best games ever made, in my opinion. And I still wish that I could play it once or twice a week every Sunday night because I think it's such a fantastic game. It is such a fantastic space to play in, and I just think it's so cool. I just think it's a cool game. You guys, you should check it out.
That's an excellent way to end that. Thank you, Billy.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, like, thank both of you for, like, hosting this and taking the time to do this, because I think we do have a really special space here in the board game hobby. David was talking about it earlier, about how, because of designers like Teuber and Catan being as monumental as it was, we did shift into a noticing of designers. And I'm very grateful that we haven't yet shifted into the gross celebrityification of designers. And when Teuber passed away, mostly everything was really sweet and fantastic. And looking back, even in the hobby, to losing other greats like Tresham, Francis Tresham, or Sid Saxon, it was the same thing of like, look at this great work. This is all fantastic. Or even the really sweet, tragic deaths like Chad Jensen, who designed Dominant Species and a bunch of other war games. Like, that was announced because, you know, his wife made a post on BGG and there was just such an outpouring of love. And, you know, I'm just happy that we still have this space in this hobby to be able to celebrate in such a sweet way. So thank you all for organizing and putting this all together. I think this was something really cool for us to be able to do.
Well, friends at home, this has been the entire cast of the Daily Work Replacement coming to you live. You can find everyone except for me, basically, writing on the blog. Someday I'll get back to it, y'all. I don't even know. You can find David talking about Catan and others and his podcast called The Game Changers, which is going to be on this feed, the Daily Work Replacement feed. And then you can find us also on the socials, Instagram. Yeah, check it out. Good content about the meta space of gaming. Hey, Alice, want to go play a game?
I do!
Yes!
I have to go to the bathroom. Okay, great.
Keep talking.
We'll keep talking. We'll try to go to the bathroom. I will
keep that in.